where the news comes to talk. It's the Round Table. Round one at 7:45. Round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on Moore in the Morning.
On round one today, Jerry Agar is here from the Jerry Agar Show. Amanda Galbraith, formerly from the mayor's office, now at Navigator Communications. Dave Trafford wakes you up on weekend mornings. And Tony Chapman is here from Tony Chapman Reactions. Happy Friday, everybody.
And for the record, I would not spend $30,000 for Jerry's head of hair.
No?
I would not.
I've never noticed. You're wearing a hat.
Seriously?
Right now.
I would if it was a proper haircut.
I spend $30,000 on hats.
There
but,
we go.
But not
well,
on
when
jerseys.
You get to the point where you can part your hair with a face cloth.
it cuts down a lot of time in the morning, Jerry.
We will get to hair a little later
it's
on.
It's Alistair McLean. Yeah.
Because there's some pretty important stuff to talk about today. Let's govern ourselves carefully here because I don't want to get into a libel suit. However, there is certainly cause for concern, I think, in Hamilton. And the quick timeline is this. For the longest time, people have said that the Red Hill Parkway was slipperier than the other parkway, the name of which I'm always forgetting, even though he's one of
Lincoln.
Our great town, Lincoln Alexander. And so that's sort of part of the local lore. But finally, in 2013, the city commissioned a report. The report came back and said, yeah, it doesn't actually, it is more slippery. They didn't say it's a disaster waiting to happen, but they said it's more slippery. That report sat unseen by city council up until it was discovered apparently almost by accident last fall, and then it only got to council this week, where everybody said, that's absolutely crazy. We have actuality? Is that why you're waving at me? Here we go.
The time is that we were in the middle of a municipal election, and we didn't have an opportunity to meet with council until early December. Happened then either as a result of still continuing to put together the story and making sure that when we did bring it to council that we had as many answers as we could possibly have. So
right, but this is an issue.
This is an issue of urgent public safety.
People
may think that this somehow was delayed, but I think when you've gone through these and you're working through it, it becomes obvious why sometimes it takes takes a certain amount of time to be able to get the right information so that the decision makers have everything they need in front of them to make the decision.
Yeah, I'm not so sure, Jerry. I mean, for me, this is like those movies where, you know, the volcano's about to erupt on the dance competition and everyone says, we've got to have the dance competition.
Why is it always, oh, well, we need time to study? No, you did the study, you got the report, and then you ignored it. I mean, that's how this story looks to me.
Remember when I was at Global, we had assigned Jackson Prosco to cover, to look into what was going on at the Gardner. It's the same kind of thing. Jackson came up with volumes of reports and studies and everything else that said, you know, if we don't do anything, that Gardner is going to start to fall down on people. And it was falling down around people. There was all kinds of warning before the city stood up on its hind legs and said, hey, we better do something about it. But it's the same thing, Jerry. The councillors had not seen most of this stuff. I don't know what happens to it.
But is that the councillor's fault or somebody?
No, I think that's staff or perhaps the way it goes with council and
yeah.
And with all due respect, because engineers apparently make up a great cohort of listeners to News Talk 1010, I love my engineers. But Amanda, this strikes me as a very typical engineering story where it's all math. So last September, they found the report and they said, well, let's confirm this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is obviously a really important issue, and there's with the Gardner as well. There's definitely a duty of care that civil servants have, and they don't want to totally inflame things. I remember when I was in the city, I was trying to make a lot of noise about the Gardner is this, the Gardner is that, because I wanted people to fund the repairs and it'd go through council, right? But they're like, we can't do this because it's not responsible. So there's a balance here. But obviously, if this road is slipperier than others, you know, you should look at the paving contract. You should look at what happened. You should look at what tools and materials were used, because I think those are real questions that we need answered.
Tony, anything? Keep going. All right, that's fine. I admire a man who's decided that on this topic...
You guys are so smart and intelligent on this.
We're spent. Oh. Toronto is fielding more requests. Toronto is fielding more requests for noise exemptions and granting more requests for noise exemptions. Tony, everyone says, we're a big growing city. There is going to be some noise, but some downtown people are fed up.
Well, it's interesting when you read, you drilled a little deeper into it, that the process for getting it is you send this application into a city councilman and then or councilwoman, and if they don't reply in 14 days, you get the exemption. So it's pretty wrought with, you know, wink, wink, if you ignore this item, I'm not allegedly, I'm just saying it's just one of the stupidest systems I've ever had for giving a thumbs up or down on something that matters like noise in the middle of the night.
Go ahead.
One of the things is, when the mayor came to office the first time, it was all construction takes too long, we're closing roads, blah, 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 we need to speed this up. Okay, so we put all these systems in place to speed up construction, roads are getting open faster. Now all of a sudden the whole city is complaining about noise. I'm sorry. Like, you live downtown. I live downtown. I live on a streetcar line. The little bell dings 24/7. I sleep through the night. There was construction on the corner. a student, like, put in.
But don't you think the process is a little flawed, where if you don't reply, you automatically get approved?
Listen, I think that the fact that it goes to counselors or a staff person.
Counselors.
See, I think the fact that it goes to counselors in the first place is questionable. It should go to staff.
I got a noise ordinance exemption 9 to noon.
Right here on News Talk 1010. Direct from the mayor's office, I might add.
Yeah, but we can turn you off.
You know what? It doesn't help, Tony.
Just one day, I want to see two cops at the door saying, sir, there's been a complaint.
There's been a complaint. Turn your mic off.
We'll get Randall Arsenault to pull that one off. So here's Lucas Meyer yesterday holding Justin Trudeau's feet to the fire, and Justin Trudeau providing word for word the same answer twice, which is always trouble.
With regards to the statement that was made in the Globe story, we're saying that, and you're saying now, that the PMO did not direct in any way. But the question is whether there was any sort of influence. Are you saying categorically there was absolutely no influence or any pushing whatsoever in this?
The allegations reported in the story are false. At no time did I or my office direct the current or previous Attorney General to make any particular decision in this matter.
But not necessarily direct, Prime Minister. Was there any sort of influence whatsoever?
Yeah. As I've said, at no time did we direct the Attorney General, current or previous, to take any decision whatsoever in this matter.
Now, I don't want to relitigate the whole thing because this audio is from yesterday. A lot of people have talked about it. But Dave Trafford, you've been a news director and you're a morning show host. Where does this have to go today? In my own estimation, in the PMO, they have to track down if anything happened, and they have to do it today. And if the minister, the former minister, continues not to speak, then that is definite trouble.
Yeah, I think this is going to kind of get out of hand in a hurry. And Scott mentioned that earlier in the show, and just to say, you know, unless you can kind of contain it, it doesn't matter what you say after that. You might even come up with the truth or exactly what had happened. It will be too late. I don't know that you can hear it at home, but I didn't realize until I sit here listening with the headphones on, you can hear people in the background whispering.
Yeah,
as if they're saying something to the prime minister in his ear.
Yeah, I heard that, but it could be another reporter saying, can I get the next question?
I get it, but it's that guy has that kind of feel about it, right?
Yeah, when you give what sounds like a clearly lawyered answer twice, even though the question has changed, maybe the prime minister's under the impression that somehow that puts a stop to the story. That just lights a fire as far
as... But he should know better.
Reporters are just going to dig harder when you do
but
that.
But David, I didn't hear a whisper. I heard a string being pulled on a neck.
Amanda, you do crisis management with people in trouble all the time. So what advice would you hand the prime minister?
They're in trouble.
Call Navigator.
Hire Navigator.
Yeah, I don't think they're calling us. But listen, this is a tough one. Obviously, he's being very, very careful because something went down. You have to know the full scope of the story, which sometimes politicians don't always know everything that goes on, right? There's plausible deniability. That may be what's at work here. I doubt it, but it's possible. And ideally, you would have your minister come out and deny it. The fact that she didn't, I think that means that, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire.
There's a split in the party and some people are going to back her.
Oh, yeah. Who knows, right? But I think what you're going to have is a very motivated Globe and Mail Bureau now to go out and prove what they did was right and get more details and more of those things. And, you know, Lucas was right to press the prime minister the way he did. So I think this story has lots of legs. I think they have yet to be able to contain it unless they come up with a full accounting of what happened and be very straightforward and honest about it and someone takes responsibility, then, you know, we're going to keep talking about
this.
There's
two things, though, that she's not in the portfolio anymore, so that kind of lets her off the hook with having to answer. Well, I get it.
Doesn't.
Not even close.
I get it. But that's what they'll claim. And the other side of it is, who's the audience here? Because this is a big story in Quebec. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just think that SNC-Lavalin is such a huge company in this country, but certainly in Quebec. Who is he actually worried about talking to here?
Well, I think what he should be worried about is not so much average Canadians who may or may not care. He should actually be worried about, like, the media gallery, right? Or it's an election year. They're going to go after this. There hasn't been a real scandal issue.
No.
And actually, if you look on surface, they legislatively put something in place where you can direct prosecution. So there's nothing illegal about that happening. It's just what happened behind the scenes, who was involved. It's all
on whose behalf.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all that stuff and everything was registered by the company. So all that stuff is very transparent. So either you come out and say, this is what happened, this is who talked to who, that's the story and that's it, or otherwise.
The additional thing that the Prime Minister did to sort of put more fuel on the fire is that he basically said that the Globe and Mail was not telling the truth. And so, as Amanda suggests, I mean, if
that's
that
red meat.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're going to sign
that's
more.
That's Bob Fife, by the way. Not any normal reporter. Like, he's a machine.
This is a Prime Minister that is perfected not answering a question. I mean, you look at him in Parliament. This is a Teflon prime minister, and I think he thinks he can just get away with the same strategy.
He might. I mean, he tried the Jagmeet Singh strategy, but that didn't actually work for him.
Yeah. What is that strategy?
Two of white supremacy?
What?
Well, the incompetence of Jagmeet Singh could, in fact, work hugely to Trudeau's favor because there's no split of the left vote.
Yeah. All right. Jeff Bezos, richest man in the world, head of Amazon. National Enquirer tried to shake him down with pictures of the little soldier. He said, you know what? Screw you.
The richest little soldier?
The richest little soldier in the world.
This was great. He was excellent. I thought this is actually like textbook what you should do. Someone comes at you, go with it with your story, tell it your way first, and they don't have any leverage on you anymore.
This is a guy setting himself up to become president of the United States.
You think so?
Yeah, I absolutely think this is a move on the chessboard. He's doing exactly what he should be doing to stop the madness that's going on with democracy and confusion in the States. I love what he did.
Does this change things for the National Enquirer, or does anybody really care if they're on the dirty side of everything?
40-foot like, earthworm swallows dog.
People just like saying pecker on the air.
Yeah, also. Mr. Yes. Smith, it's Mr. Pecker.
Mr. Pecker.
All right, I said we would talk about hair. I don't think it was on the agenda, but the study, and I'll put quotation marks around it, established, I did not know, there are 7 steps of hair loss for a man.
It's like warning.
The average, exactly. First there's anger, then denial. But the average guy who has lost his hair would pay $5,000 to get to the next level. So to go from a 4 to a 3, $30,000 in total. Dave?
No. But as I said, I'm sure I've spent $30,000 in hats. So other than that, I don't get it. I heard Scott talking about his friends who are all of a sudden, you know, in middle age and becoming really concerned and self-conscious about it. I got other things to worry about.
Yeah. I'm just glad the comb-over's gone out of style. That one always confused
me. Has it? I've seen it in action lately.
No, but that's out of style. It was never in style.
Oh, no.
I would say that you'd say the look of U.S. senators was the comb-over.
No, it was in use. That doesn't mean it was in style.
Yeah. I remember when I was working at Q107 with John Gallagher, he actually went and had a hair, one of the first guys to have a hair transplant. He did it live on the air on television. So he didn't have to pay for it. It was comped. Exactly.
Well, when it comes to the comb-over, I mean, René Lévesque had one of the most famous ones going. And if you got close to him, you could see it was like flower arranging. I mean, it must have taken minutes at a time. To arrange
it. Hit the wind tunnel in Montreal with his cigarette going and his hair going.
Folks, thank you all very much. Great roundtable as always.
Catch the roundtable. Round 1 at 7:45. Round 2 at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. In-depth radio. News Talk 1010.